So that had a defining mark in your life. So then you took on Native American issues, other issues, right, while living in California.
Right.
Some of those.
Well, what's interesting, you know, at this point in my life and thinking back, most everything I've ever done, I've done it because I was motivated by the issue. And so after Alcatraz, I was watching the news, and I saw a group of Indian people who reminded me of people here at home, and they were fighting to get their land back. And they were from the River Tribe in Northern California. So I called them up and said, I'm a volunteer. I'll help you do whatever you need to do to get your land back. And what they needed most was help at their legal office, so I learned to type real fast so I could help at their legal office. Later, I got involved in the Native American community in the Bay Area, and what they needed most was programs, and so I learned how to write grant proposals so I could help them write proposals. I found a lady who worked for Oakland Public Schools and followed her around and asked if she could show me how to write grant proposals. So I learned how to write grant proposals, not as a career move, but because I wanted to develop programs. In my volunteer work for the Pitt River Tribe, I learned a lot about treaty issues and tribal sovereignty. You know, and all that eventually helped me here. But most every time I've ever done anything, it's been because I really care about the issue a lot. Being involved, I directed a youth center, sort of a street after-school program in Oakland for Native American students. Just did a lot of different things there. Was very active and very involved.
You were beginning to lay perhaps the groundwork for leadership back then. Was it unusual for you as a female to be in that work, or were there many other females at the time, or was it
there were other
world?
Females at the time. There were other female leaders of their tribes, and I actually did some research on that and found out that when I was elected, in my first election, I was elected as deputy chief and president of the tribal council. There were either 69 or 79 other leaders of tribes at that time. There are now about 560 federally recognized tribes. At that time, I think there were probably around 500. I'm not sure. And now there are approximately 130 that are led by women. So there were certainly other women leading tribal governments. And the things I did here at the tribe before I ran for office were not things traditionally that women did. I founded the Cherokee Nation Community Development Department, and we built water lines and built houses and that sort of thing. You know, I think that's one of the reasons I got elected, because a lot of the rural men felt, okay, we're not sure about this, but she can get things done. It never really occurred to me not to do things because I'm a woman. When we came home from California to Oklahoma, we rented a U-Haul. I put all my stuff in it, and me, my daughters, and their guinea pig and dog, and made some sandwiches, and we took off across the country. I don't think I ever sat down and thought, well, I can't do this because I'm a woman.
That's never occurred to you?
No. I don't know whether it's because there were so many children. My mom and my dad never did this to us, but I'm so grateful that our parents didn't confine us. My mom never made me feel there were things we couldn't do because we were poor, or things we couldn't do because we were Cherokee, or things I couldn't do because I was a woman. I never, ever felt like that. And I see so many adults with all kinds of hang-ups and problems and that sort of thing caused by things that happened during their youth or their childhood. And my mother never did that to any of us. This is what good girls do. I have no idea what good girls do. She never said silly stuff like that to us. Anyway, I'm very grateful to my parents because of that. My mom is someone who just had all these kids, and no matter what we did, she gave us unconditional love. May not understand it. My mother's a Republican and a conservative, but my brother Richard wanted to go off and join the Wounded Knee occupation. It was like, okay, well, take care of yourself.
Before you hooked that trailer to the car, you divorced your first husband.
I did, yeah.
So you had some of this problem at home as you were also out.
I did.
Being a leader in the community.
I did. He was very handsome. He was very nice. We lived in a nice place. And as I started to get more interested in things outside our home, I used to look at him and wish I could want to live a life like that. But I didn't want to live a life like that.
A traditional marriage, probably.
No, I did not. No, traditional marriage.
That's what he wanted.
Oh, he did. Very traditional marriage. My life and focus was to be on him and going to his soccer games. He was a soccer player. Go to his soccer games, cheer him on, be concerned with the kids and not with anything else outside that. So that's what he wanted, and I couldn't live like that.
then it was time to move back.
It was time to move back, yeah.
But you did mention Wounded Knee. Maybe we can talk about that for history, because your brother,
Richard, my brother Richard.
Let me just say for the record that Wounded Knee, which began in February 73, when the town of Wounded Knee, South Dakota, was taken over by followers of the American Indian Movement.
Right.
And those who occupied controlled the town for 71 days, while the U.S. Marshal Service and other law enforcement agencies cordoned off the town. That's the setting there. Why did they take over Wounded Knee?
Well, I think it's very complicated. There's a lot's been written about it, and there are at least five films about it. But I think that very few people provide the historical context for what occurred. It's very complicated. The situation's very complicated. The government, some of the people there felt, was very repressive. And they couldn't change the government within the boundaries of the tribal government. So the elders called the American Indian Movement people in. And it was the elders, not the federal government, not the young people, but the elders who called an end to it. I think after someone, maybe the second person, anyway, I think it was after someone was shot. But it was about the stress between the more traditional faction of people that lived there and the formal tribal leadership. That's what it was about.
With your brother Richard going there, did you think about doing that yourself?
I thought about it, but it seemed more like a war, you know. I think it was, and it wasn't something that I felt that I could be of any particular help in. My brother was actually in training to be a producer at KQED. Was it KQED? I can't remember the call letters of one of the local stations there, and he left that to go do that.
Well, in 76 then, I believe it was, that you moved back to Oklahoma with your
brothers.
Right,
mm-hmm.
And that's when you then attended classes at the University of Arkansas.
Yeah, a little after that. I worked here for a while, and then I went to the University of Arkansas.